It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Grandpa.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. But okay, Joe, but you know, the bulk of your work in recovery has been in the criminal justice field, isn't it?
Well, it has. I mean, just a sort of interesting aside is I never expected to become a counsellor.
No.
It wasn't in my plan.
No.
And so the sort of journey to get there was basically that, you know, I was looking to change my career because I'd had this career, but I couldn't go back to it, Jim, because those elements were still there.
That's right.
And it was a risk for me.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a new and I tried film school for 18 months. I loved it.
Oh, did you?
But it was very hard to get in a green card to get into that field.
Yeah.
And so because I was in recovery and I have friends in recovery, some of them had become counsellors and were working in treatment centres, and one in particular in Clapham.
Yeah.
And I was I was trying to find something, and he said, well, and I, you know, he said, why don't you do some work there?
Yeah.
They're looking for people to help
That's
out.
Right.
And that was my door in. I didn't realise at the time, but I did that for about 8 months. And then I started to think, well, hang on, there might be something to this counselling business. Maybe this is something I could do. And lo and behold, what happened was that I started looking in the papers at jobs. And I think, you know, I thought, well, I want to be a counsellor. Well, I want to be a proper addictions counsellor.
Yeah.
I don't just want to go into 12-step.
No, no.
So this job came up at the Bethlehem Royal Hospital.
Yes.
Where they had, for the first time, they were looking at aftercare and people leaving detox treatment.
That's right.
And they had a place on the grounds of the Bethlehem Royal Hospital, which they were just opening up, called Dower House. And I saw this post advertised for key work. And I went for it, and lo and behold, I got the job. And that was my grounding. And I ended up in that role for 3 years in the NHS. But do you want to hear the funny part about this?
Yeah, please.
The extraordinary part.
Yes.
My life's been full of these extraordinary occurrences.
Yes.
I had actually detoxed in that place.
Oh, fantastic.
Many years.
I love
before.
That. Yeah. Well, the great thing is, this happens to be, listeners, a Thursday evening. I'm interviewing Joe here. And normally on a Thursday evening, I go to the Bethlehem Royal Hospital and I attend a meeting there, a recovery meeting.
That's the first one I went to.
This connection. And in the 90s, I qualified as a social worker and I was a care manager for Croydon. And once every 3 weeks, I used to go to the Bethlehem with David Ball. He was a psychiatrist. And the nurses. And we'd see the people from... what's it called? It was the alcohol unit. They'd come in.
Whitley One.
It, Whitley One. And we'd assess them and if they needed treatment. So this Bethlehem,
wow, we got another connection.
That's amazing.
Jim.
Have you been, and this is for you listeners as well, I'm not just having a private conversation with Joe, but Joe, have you been to the Museum of the Mind at the Bethlehem?
Are you talking about the
new museum they have?
I don't know. No, I haven't.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. It was a runner-up 2 years ago in the Museum of the Year.
Oh, wow.
It's phenomenal.
I should go and see
it. Oh, you should. Yeah. And they have exhibitions there.
Yeah.
It's in the main building.
Right.
Anyway, look, before we go on, I mean, every picture tells a story. And that just happens to be your second selection, doesn't it?
It does, indeed.
Any reason why you chose that?
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan, but the song particularly was a period where I thought he produced, you know, really good stuff.
Yeah.
But the song resonated with me because there's lots of echoes of myself in this. The adolescence, the change, the growing up, the wanting to explore.
Yeah.
Without going into it too deeply, there's certain lyrics in there like, spent some time feeling inferior, standing in front of my mirror, comb my hair in a thousand ways, but I end up looking just the same.
And
if you listen carefully to these lyrics, there's so many things, but it's also about...
Yeah.
Daddy said, son, you want to see the world. I wouldn't blame you if you wanted to leave. Well, even that resonates with me because there was a period where I dropped everything and went travelling around France and Europe for about 4 months. I sold all my record collection. This is just after leaving school. And I shouldn't have been going. And I was a bit of a rebel. And off I went.
Wow.
And this song captures that.
I must listen to it with different ears. Here we are, Rod Stewart. Every picture tells a story.
working just the same. Daddy said, son, you better see the world. I wouldn't blame you if you wanted to leave. But remember one thing, don't lose your head. To a woman that'll spend your bread. So I got out. Woo.
Keys. 'Cause it's all been said before. Make the best.
Well, there's Rod Stewart. I must really give that track a few listens. And it's a great album, isn't it, Joe?
Oh, it's great. It's a classic. 1972, and it was, all of it was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, yeah, about your work, you know. And I mean, I encountered you, I think, or met you when you were working at Wandsworth.
That's right.
Prison, because I used to come and do my sessions there on a Christmas Eve, and it was incredibly moving. But like what I just said to you in the break was that I was so impressed and quite surprised at the how the group there, the Rapt group, were just very enlightened men, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think probably one of the reasons I went to work for Rapt Forward was because it had the 12-step model.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's such a proven model that works worldwide, renowned.
Sure.
And I love the ethos and the sort of spirit of it, because Rapt developed because a recovering alcoholic went to America and saw a model of the 12-step treatment working in prisons in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, that's
And he thought, I've got to take this back to England.
Yeah.
So he came back to England, and it's just one person, two of them, I think, two friends, started knocking on prison governor's doors and saying, look, we've got this program, we don't need any money, we'll
help. That's right.
And eventually he knocked on enough doors, and one of them was opened, and the governor said, yes, okay, you can stop.
Yeah.
And it's just mushroomed from there.
It has, isn't it? Was this in the early 80s when they were doing this? They got into the prisons?
Well, I started working for them in 95, and they'd been going for about two. So I think it was early 90s.
Early 90s, was it? Yeah. And it was RAT, which stood for?
Rehabilitation of Addicted Prisoners.
That's right, yeah.
And the principal thing about it was is that people in prisons should have access to the same level and standard and type of treatment that's available in the community.
Yeah, that's right.
So we were bringing that treatment into the prison.
Sure, yeah.
And this, as I say, this model works wherever you are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually was privileged to go to Send prison, a woman's prison.
Yes.
And they had a 12-step program there. And it was incredible. They put on a convention, the kind of inmates, like a 12-step convention. And I had a gap of 5 years in between visits on one occasion. And there was a woman there, and she, I don't know, she was there on my first visit, and she was there 5 years later.
Right.
But there was kind of total acceptance. She had a few more years to go.
Yeah.
You know, but, and she said the program just enabled me to to manage all this. And it was quite amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal charity.
Yeah.
Still going strong. And they've got something like almost 600 employees now.
Oh, really?
Because they're the biggest sort of national provider in the country. So when I started, I was very lucky. I was probably about 20 staff when I started.
Yes, yes, it must be. Yes. So you were at Wandsworth, and any other?
Well,
were you?
I actually started at Downview, which is Downview. Where the program started.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and then I moved to Coldingley.
Yeah.
And I was there for a couple of years, and then I went to Wandsworth.
Mm.
And I was at Wandsworth for quite a period.
Yeah.
And I've since then, I did actually work in Downview, which is now a women's prison. So
that's
it went
right.
full circle for me.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, 20 years later, here I am back at Downview.
Yeah.
But it's now a women's prison. Mm. And that was great to work with women, because I think they're very underrepresented.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly in prisons. And there's interesting facts like the prison population is about 95,000 in this country.
Right.
But only 5,000 of them are women.
Really?
Yeah.
As little as that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And so it was nice to be able to contribute to, I think, you know, an area where it had been under-resourced and under-supported.
So, and again, you know, as we speak, you're on the verge of a change after being with, well, they're called the Forward Trust now, aren't they, I think?
They're called the Forward Trust, yeah.
And you've been with the organisation for, how long is it? Altogether?
Been, yeah. Me?
Yeah.
This will be the 24th year.
Yeah, 24 years. That's amazing. Just wonderful. So, no, you know, you must have touched a lot of people. The message went out there, which is amazing. Because I've been to other prisons with my work, and prisons that haven't had 12-step programs. And that's not really to decry whatever the other prisons had going, but I found there was something missing.
Yeah.
And I found, you know, when I did my session there, these young men, normally young, were hungry. They wanted, they'd come along, they wanted to get well.
Yeah.
And it was just a shame that, you know, there wasn't that model in that prison.
Yeah.
But there was the meeting. There would invariably be a 12-step meeting once a week. So there was something.
Yeah.
Because we're not just talking about treatment, are we? We're talking about a program for life.
Absolutely, yeah. As recovery is ongoing.
As we...
yeah, as we appreciate.
As we appreciate, yeah. So, Joe, I normally, you know, kind of wind up these... these sessions with asking, you know, my the interviewee, you know, what it's like for them at the moment. And
right. Well, yeah, I mean, luckily, I mean, you know, recovery is about dealing with life on life's terms.
Yes.
I feel lucky and privileged to have got into recovery.
Yeah.
And, of course, life still happens. So I've had every eventuality happen to me.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of joy. And, you know, 2 years ago, I separated from my wife. We're divorced now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? See, yeah.
And my daughter just recently has told me that she's going to have a baby.
Oh,
so wow. I'm going to be a grandpa.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, that is remarkable. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And I'm also very lucky I've got this new job. To go. I feel like, you know, things are still vital and happening.
That's interesting you say that, and I'm glad, I'm happy for you, because, as you know, I've come out of this 2 years, these two major health issues, and I'm really recovering, and things have come along for me. Like, I've just become a grandfather for the sixth time, but it's my youngest daughter, and it's been it's different because, I don't know, there's a full circle thing there.
Yeah.
She's 27, and that was the age that I was when I came into recovery, so I'm sure that's got something to do with it. But when I was holding this little boy, Teddy, his name is, I was holding him the other day, and he was like half a day old.
Wow.
There was a power about this little person. There's incredible power in babies.
Yeah, incredible.
You know,
I know.
Maybe that's why, because when I wasn't married, didn't have children, I kind of, children, actually they frighten me.
Yeah.
And the younger they were, I can't handle that.
Unknown species.
but it's, so, there's a lot of good things for me going on as well. But I'm really glad, you know, there is for you, and that's tremendous, Joe. So, as we normally do, I want to play out this interview with your final track, which is, well, again, just talk about it a bit.
Well, yeah, it's Peter Gabriel. It's Don't Give Up.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful song. You know, I'm a big fan of Peter Gabriel and his lyrics. But it resonates with me so much because it actually, I think in so many ways it sort of prompted my recovery.
Yeah.
Again, the lyrics are very poignant. If you listen to them, this you know, I shed my skin. This is the new stuff.
That's right.
Don't give up. You know, and there were times, you know, that I needed to hear that.
Yeah.
And I love this song. It's such a good song.
And he's got a wonderful person accompanying him, isn't he, on the track?
Yeah.
Kate? Is it Kate
Bush?
Kate Bush.
Kate Bush, yeah.
She's on it as well.
She's on it and she's great.
She's great as well.
She's fantastic. And,
anyway, Joe, look, it's been a pleasure.
To everyone in the country, don't give up.
That's it. What a great way to end it. You know, three words, don't give up. Everything's going to be okay in the end. If it ain't okay, it ain't the end. And that is true. And I hope you've enjoyed this show. I have. I certainly have. And I've, you know, I thought I knew about Joe, but I didn't. I know a lot more about him after today. So thanks, Joe. It's been a pleasure. So here's Peter Gabriel with Don't Give Up.
strong. We were wanted all along. I was taught to fight, taught to win. I never thought I could fail. No fight left, or so it seems. I am a man whose dreams have all deserted. I've changed my face, I've changed my name, but no one wants you when you lose.
Don't give up, 'cause you have friends. Don't give up, you're not beaten yet.
Thought that I could be a fainted. Thought that we'd be last to go. It is so strange the way things turn. Drove the night toward my home, the place that I was born, on the lakeside. As daylight broke, I saw the earth, the trees had burned down to ground.
Don't give up, you still have us. Don't give up, we don't need much of anything. Don't give up, 'cause somewhere there's a place where we worry too much. It's gonna be alright. When times get rough, you can't fall back on us. Don't give up, please don't give up.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time.
Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.